Harry's phones were both dumped in a trash can near the edge of campus, Mr. Numbers said. There are also tracking chips in some of their pieces of clothing and in their bodies, all of which I've confirmed seem to have been disabled. Whoever orchestrated this abduction had a tremendous level of skill, and a high level of knowledge regarding the safety procedures we put in place to deal with situations just like this one. I'm afraid both of the coaches fall into that category.
Wait, you bugged our bodies?
Priorities, Miss Adair. There will be ample time for you to mourn your violated privacy at a later date. Right now, we have two of your group confirmed as abducted, and no idea if the rest of you are being targeted for a similar attempt.
Mr. Numbers chastised her. He turned his attention to Mr. Transport.
I've spoken with our home office, and we are going into an immediate lockdown. They will be sending an enforcer as additional protection until a safe extraction point is determined. He will arrive within the hour.
And what about Herschel and Mary? Vince asked. What's the plan to help them?
We have been tasked with ensuring the safety of you, our remaining charges,
Mr. Numbers said, several degrees of cold forced into his voice.
I'm not certain what efforts will be undertaken to reclaim your friends, but I do know that we are not going to be part of it.
Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport looked at each other. They both knew their role in the company. If Home Office wasn't sending their team after the abductees, then it meant no one was going after them. The company had decided to protect the three it had rather than chase the two it lost, and it was sending down a representative to make certain the orders were complied with.
No, Vince said, shaking his head. We're going after them.
Don't be ridiculous, Mr. Numbers said. You have no idea how to find them.
There has to be a way, Vince replied with a shrug. I'll find it.
That is not a plan. That is a slapdash idea that will culminate in nothing more than putting yourself at risk by leaving a safe environment,
Mr. Numbers countered.
I don't care. I won't sit around while my friends are in trouble, Vince said. Though I'll admit, I'm out of my depth and welcome your help.
Ludicrous. We have our orders and we are complying with them, Mr. Numbers said.
Mr. Transport, on the other hand, stepped toward Vince and softened his voice to a kinder tone, as if in hopes of reasoning with the boy.
Vince, you need to think about what you're saying. Even if you could find them, what would you do when you caught up? Coach George is much stronger than you, and Persephone has ample cunning to go with her power.
No question about it, Vince agreed. But I won't be alone. I'll have Alice and Nick. Besides, I don't have to beat them. I just have to keep them busy long enough to make sure everyone gets away.
What does that accomplish? You'd just be trading in your own freedom for theirs,
Mr. Transport pointed out.
Yes, I would, Vince agreed, though I doubt it would come to that. The coaches could have taken any of us. If they took those two, then it's because they're the ones they wanted.
Mr. Transport stared at the boy for a long moment. He'd been in charge of these kids for nearly a year now, and he'd seen them change and grow so much in that short time. Mr. Transport still remembered Vince on that first day, so awkward and uncertain in how to handle himself. The boy had gotten comfortable here, but the one thing he'd never truly overcome was that lingering fear about his power. It tainted everything he did, colored his own confidence and how he carried himself through life. There was no fear in his eyes right now, though, only a relentless drive to act. Looking at those eyes, Mr. Transport realized the only way he was going to stop Vince was to knock him unconscious, and even then, he wasn't 100% sure the boy's body wouldn't keep crawling toward the door.
We'll help you, Mr. Transport said.
We most certainly will not, Mr. Numbers disagreed. Mr. Transport, do I need to remind you that—
Enough, Luke,
Mr. Transport said, whipping his head toward his partner and raising his voice. They took our fucking kids. Mary and Herschel, the students we've watched over and we've said we were responsible for. We were supposed to protect them, and that rat son of a bitch snatched them right out from under us.
While I understand your attachment, there is no need to let emotion cloud our judgment,
Mr. Numbers said, his voice remaining perfectly even.
We have our orders, and we will comply with them.
Mr. Transport scooped something off the coffee table in a fluid motion and strode over to his partner. When he next spoke, his voice was no longer raised. Instead, it was a whisper with the intensity of a deathbed confession.
They took our kids. I'm not the company, and I'm not some stranger. Don't pull the automaton act with me. I know you aren't unfeeling. I know you're pissed off. I know you're aware that no one else is going to help them.
They are not our kids, Mr. Transport. They are just our latest assignment. An assignment that has been altered.
Sure they aren't,
Mr. Transport said. He slapped his right hand into Mr. Numbers's own palm, pressing the object he'd nabbed from the table into the shorter man's flesh. Mr. Numbers turned his hand up slowly, revealing the white king from the chess set resting between his fingers.
They took Mary and Herschel, and the company is just going to let them go.
We have spent our lives as loyal employees. How do you recommend we even go about the act of committing treason against our handlers?
Mr. Numbers asked.
Easy. With a whole lot of lying,
Mr. Transport replied.
You're sure you want to do this?
Mr. Numbers asked.
I am.
We don't have long before the Enforcer arrives.
Then we'll move fast.
Mr. Numbers curled his fingers around the chess piece, grasping it tightly in the ball of his fist.
I'll go talk to the other half,
Mr. Numbers said.
I'll drop you off in a moment,
Mr. Transport said, giving his partner a brief smile. He turned to address the others, who had been watching their hushed exchange with growing trepidation.
We can't do much, but we'll help,
Mr. Transport announced.
Thank you, Vince said. With all of us working together, I know we can help our friends.
Yeah, just one problem with that, Nick chimed in, taking a few steps away from the other two. You guys can have fun riding up and playing cowboy, but my ass is out of here.
144.
That's not funny, Nick,
Alice chided him.
I'm not joking, Nick told her.
Gone was his usual smirk and taunting tone. Instead, his face was pinched and serious, coated with more gravity than any of the dorm's residents could remember seeing before.
I'll stay until we get the all clear, and then I'm going back to Vegas.
But our friends are in trouble, Vince said.
Your friends, Vince, Nick corrected.
In case you missed the big reveal downstairs, our cover just got blown. Now, while you and Mary and probably Roy can all still get by after being outed, my only shot was to fly under the radar. The blowing of the whistle on us signaled the end of my career at Lander.
That doesn't change the fact that Mary and Herschel need us, though,
Alice jumped in. Nick laughed, a hard and bitter sound, instead of his usual robust chuckles.
What part of this aren't you getting?
I'm leaving. That means I'm done with this whole facade. I'm not risking my neck to save those two because it's not my problem. They mean nothing to me, and I no longer have to pretend otherwise.
I don't understand, Vince said slowly.
You're our friend, a fellow former Powered. You're one of us.
No, Vince.
I'm just a great liar who wanted to learn as much about his abilities as he could. Nick told him, something that might have been gentleness leaking into his voice. Nothing personal. The day our secret came out was always going to be my exit. I just needed a group of allies to use during my time here.
I don't believe you, Vince said simply.
I didn't expect you to, Nick said, half a smile twitching across his face.
You'll come help us. I know you will,
Vince told him, patting him on the shoulder. I have to go get ready for the fight, but I have faith you'll reach the right decision.
There's more to you than you think.
Without another word, Vince walked away, past Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport, who were furtively whispering in their own corner, content to let the students resolve their own problems while the duo tackled logistics of the rescue effort.
Same old Vince, Nick said, shaking his head.
He turned to Alice. Are you going to give a cute little speech, too?
No,
Alice said softly.
I just want to know something. You're saying you were lying the entire time? About everything?
Sorry, Alice, but yes. I guess on the plus side, I can finally admit your suspicions of my duplicitous nature were right. Kudos. You're the only non-telepath one who caught on.
I guess I was,
Alice said. Nick expected a lot of things to follow. He was braced for tears, accusations, pleas, or even yelling. Unfortunately, he was not braced for the right hook Alice deftly slammed into his face. There was an audible crack and a muffled thudding as Nick fell to the floor, his hands racing up to cover the eye Alice had punched. Nearby, his sunglasses tumbled to the ground as well, cleaved neatly in two by the blow, the left eye's lens spinning to a stop some feet away.
What the fuck?
Nick demanded from his prone position on the floor.
You lied to us. You manipulated us. You want to abandon us, and you're surprised I hit you? I thought you were supposed to be smart.
Alice shook her hand in pain with as much subtlety as she could muster, trying not to let her eyes tear up from a potent mixture of injury, outrage, and betrayal.
I did what I had to do in order to get by, Nick spat at her. Bullshit. You could have gotten by on your own if you were so determined to stay alone. You didn't have to be the bastard who makes people trust him, only to bail when things get hard. You didn't have to let us think we could care.
Alice stared down at the boy she had spent so much of the year fighting with, pining after, verbally sparring with, and finding comfort in. And much as she hated herself for it, a part of her still wanted to offer him a hand up from the ground.
You know what really turns my stomach, though? That night I kissed you. I did it hoping that under the slick veneer there was actually this decent guy with good reasons for hiding himself. I thought that the man behind the mask had to be better. And now I find out that the real you is nothing but a selfish coward who won't risk anything for people who would put it all on the line for him if things were reversed.
Are you done yet? Nick asked, glaring up at her unabashedly.
Only with you,
Alice said, spinning on her heel and walking away. Herschel's eyes began to flutter as he came around. His first thought was wondering who had stuffed his head full of cotton. His second was to realize that probably wasn't the case, but he was working through one hell of a groggy headache.
I still wish we could have used the teleporter,
said a female voice, though it sounded vaguely muffled, like it was coming through a wall.
"Wish in one hand, shit in the other," barked back a harsh male voice.
This one, Herschel took only seconds to place. He'd heard far more of it, after all. Herschel opened his eyes to see what was going on. He didn't remember anything after kissing Mary, so he had no idea why his head hurt so bad, or why he was apparently riding in the back of a moving truck, or why he was handcuffed and shackled to the floor. What had been mere curiosity was quickly transitioning to apprehension.
"Looks like Sleeping Beauty is coming around," Coach George said, giving him a smile.
Herschel noticed that Mary was sitting next to him, not handcuffed, but also not conscious. She had a silver mechanism wrapped around her head that he was certain hadn't been there previously.
"What's going on?"
Herschel asked, his tongue feeling thick and slow in his mouth.
"Phew, seems like that slumber Persephone induced did a doozy on you, Daniels," Coach George said. "I think she might have used too much. Sorry about that."
Herschel wasn't sure how well he could communicate verbally, so instead of trying again, he looked around, then raised his metal-ensnared hands with a questioning look on his face.
"Ah, you want me to explain, I take it?"
Herschel nodded emphatically.
"Well, Daniels, the short answer is actually pretty simple," Coach George said with a reassuring smile. "You're being kidnapped."
145.
"Kidnapped?"
Herschel mumbled, his mind comprehending, but his mouth still refusing its usual duties.
"Close enough," Coach George agreed. "Though, to be honest, you're more being brought along because you were there. Wrong place, wrong time sort of thing. There was only one of you we actually wanted."
Herschel's eyes flicked to Mary.
"Obviously. Process of elimination when there are only two of you isn't that tough,"
Coach George confirmed.
"What's on her head?"
"Oh, you like? It's a subsonic neutralization... Ah, fuck. This thing has a really technical name, but I can never remember it all. It's a gizmo that keeps people unconscious. Very useful, but very controlled and hard to come by. Hence why you aren't sporting one. I mean, why bother?"
"'Cause I was just there,"
Herschel managed to spit out.
"Yes, that," Coach George agreed. "And the more obvious reason, Mary is one of the most powerful advanced minds in recorded history, let alone at her age. Containing her awake would be hellacious, to say the least. You, on the other hand, are a fat smart kid with self-esteem issues."
"Roy,"
was all Herschel managed to get out before Coach George laughed.
"Roy? I'm sorry, do you think I'm gonna be giving you any whiskey? You can't access Roy, and that means you're of no more concern to me than any other regular human."
Coach George paused for a moment and regarded his conscious captive.
"It's kind of funny, you know. Back when you were just powered, you almost certainly would have shifted by now. But without a specific trigger, you're stuck there, utterly helpless. In a way, you were actually stronger back before you had any control. Ain't that a bitch?"
Herschel made a valiant effort to spit at Coach George, but his slippery tongue and untrustworthy mouth betrayed him once more, leading to little more than a stream of drool falling from his lips. Though his cheeks burned on instinct, his eyes continued to send daggers at Coach George's rugged, unbearably smiling face.
"We have 15 minutes, Mr. Transport announced as he returned to the room.
He had left with Mr. Numbers only seconds prior, but was returning as a solo act. At that point, we will go, pick up Mr. Numbers, find out Mary and Herschel's location, drop you off, and return to meet the man coming to stop us from doing those very things.
You won't stay and help?
Alice asked, a new dimension of fear entering her voice. Losing Nick had been worrying. Losing the only two adults left in their party was an altogether terrifying development. Mr. Transport shook his head.
Alice, try to understand. If Mr. Numbers and I are believed to have gone against company orders, then come next year, not only is there zero chance of us still being here, but there will be vast repercussions for him and me both. If they just think you all got the drop on us, we might still be able to swing the same post here next year. Additionally, we will be here to distract our associate from finding you all too soon.
Why does that matter?
Because his order will only be to recover you three. It won't bear regard to your friends. And he will execute his orders. Trust me,
Mr. Transport said, a bit of the color slipping out of his face.
We understand, Vince said, standing up from the sofa where he'd been resting. We have 15 minutes?
14 and a half now, Mr. Transport corrected. Gather any tools or weapons you might favor. Get dressed for combat. Gather whatever you think will give you the best edge.
His eyes flicked briefly to the boy's side door, which Nick had slammed ceremoniously behind himself directly after his and Alice's altercation. Alice pretended not to notice.
"Guess I'm getting out of my dress, then,"
she said, turning on a stiletto heel and gliding through the girl's side door.
"Vince, I assume you'll want to change out of slacks and a button-down,"
Mr. Transport urged.
"Of course. There's something else I need, though. Something very important,"
Vince said slowly.
"Then go get it. This deadline is non-negotiable."
"I'll need your help," Vince explained. "It isn't exactly close at hand."
"Fine, fine. As long as we can get it in time to get back here for Alice's pickup, I'll take you wherever you need to go,"
Mr. Transport agreed. Vince told him the location. Mr. Transport's already pallid coloration whitened another shade. Nick sat on his bed, staring off into space. Every now and then, he would reach to adjust the sunglasses that were no longer there. Instead, they rested on his desk as a pile of debris. It was no great loss. In truth, he'd planned on smashing them himself once his time here at Lander had ended. He was still a bit miffed that it was that girl who'd had the pleasure of their destruction instead of him, though. Nick's hand almost tightened in reflex at the thought of Alice and her sucker punch. He was slipping. He couldn't believe he nearly allowed an emotion to manifest itself as a physical gesture. He'd have to put himself in some intense retraining when he got back to Vegas. At least his planning wasn't slipping. Nick had kept a go-bag under his bed since his first day in Melbrook, a bag that was now propped up against his door. He could grab it when the rest left to go on their suicide mission and make his escape. He'd purchased and parked two vehicles other than the bug in key locations on the Lander campus, vehicles with no record of being owned or driven by Nicholas Campbell, just in case. The windows were tinted to minimize recognition. There were toll passes to accommodate any route he might take stashed in his glove boxes. Nick re-ran his mental checklist and confirmed what he already knew. That he was forethinking, that he was intelligent, and that he had planned for every possibility. Almost. 146.
"Are you certain this is a good idea?" Mr. Transport asked, his voice slightly raised to be heard over the roar and crackle of the blaze.
"Honestly, not really," Vince admitted, his own tone at an equal volume. The two stood about a mile away from the perimeter of a tremendous inferno, the forest fire that was currently assaulting Southern California. Since that morning's report, the ravaging flames had grown in intensity, defying the valiant attempts of local officials to bring it under control. The area had been evacuated hours ago, so Mr. Transport and Vince stood alone as they stared into the flickering heat steadily creeping toward them. Even from this distance, Mr. Transport's face was warm, and his breath felt a touch smoky.
"Then perhaps we should conceive of a different plan," Mr. Transport proposed.
Vince glanced down at his wristwatch. "We have 10 minutes left. Any ideas for something we could put together and execute in that much time?"
"We could raid a camping store. You could pop the sterno cans one by one to absorb their heat in more manageable chunks."
Vince shook his head.
"I somehow don't think it would be quite the same effect."
"And why exactly do you need this effect?" Mr. Transport asked. "I realize you are facing a significant challenge, but doesn't this seem a bit like overkill?"
"None of us landed a single hit on Coach George when we fought him," Vince told Mr. Transport. "Not even Mary or Chad. With only Alice, Nick, and me coming at him, we have zero chance of winning, or even stalling long enough for one of us to recover our friends and escape."
"I was beginning to wonder if you were aware of the realistic odds."
"I am. I am also aware that I'm the only one of us left who was enrolled in the combat training. That means I'll have to handle George on my own, and trust the others to retrieve Mary and Herschel. As it stands, I have minimal ability to battle against Coach George, and no defense against Persephone. That only leaves me one viable option."
"Do tell," Mr. Transport encouraged.
A slow, half-mad smile spread across Vince's face. The firelight's reflection danced in his blue eyes as they seemed to drift off to some long-ago place and time. "Pure offense."
"That seems like a poor strategy to win," Mr. Transport told him. "Assuming you can even handle this much energy. I've read the reports on your activities, you know. You've spent all year focusing on minimizing how little you took into your body. You haven't tried to find your limits in the slightest. For all we know, this exceeds what you can contain."
"It very well might," Vince agreed.
"So again, I must ask, why are you so set on this course of action?"
"Because even if this has a 99% chance of killing me or not being enough, at least it gives us a shot. I'll take 1% over zero any day."
Mr. Transport let out a short laugh in spite of himself.
"I think that's more the mindset of a fool than a hero."
"My father once told me the best heroes were the ones too stupid to care about the odds," Vince replied. "So thank you."
Vince drew in several deep breaths, saturating his lungs with oxygen. He knew once he entered the blaze, he would have little time and less air to act with. A few moments lost choking on the smoke could break his concentration and cost him everything. He glanced down at his watch. 8 minutes left. For all his brave words, the truth was, Vince was scared to step forward. He wasn't at all sure he could do this. And even if he did, He wasn't sure he would be able to take back Herschel and Mary. He was afraid he would die in the process, of course, but that didn't scare him nearly as much as the knowledge that there was only one chance to get them back. He, Alice, and Nick were that chance. Vince was terrified he wouldn't be strong enough, and he would let his friends down. But despite all that fear, he never questioned the fact that he had to try. "I'm ready," Vince said softly. Mr. Transport gave a curt nod and moved them through space. They reappeared at a central point in the fire, Mr. Transport lingering long enough only to be sure the heat didn't render Vince unconscious. The boy stood stalwart, so Mr. Transport retreated to their previous position. Vince could survive such temperature through his ability, but Mr. Transport had no such protection. All he could do now was wait, and try to have faith in the strange, silver-haired boy. Vince didn't breathe once he was dropped off. He'd had more than enough experience to know that, in this environment, the air would burn his lungs as it was already doing to his skin. Normally, when he was absorbing, Vince had to reach out to connect to the energy, finding it amidst the ambient sources permeating the world around him. This time was different. From the moment he appeared, the heat was overpowering him, trying to choke and claw its way inside his fragile, fleshy form. The heat wasn't just knocking at the door. It was slamming its shoulder against it and screaming profanities in an effort to force its way in. Vince didn't have to reach out this time. Instead, he closed his eyes, steeled his nerves, and flung the door wide open, demanding every ounce of energy this fire could give. For a sliver of an instant, nothing happened. What followed next was captured on satellite imagery. The cause of it was debated for several years to come, with a wide variety of conspiracy theories centering around it and entire doctoral theses being written on the phenomenon. It wasn't until Vince's story was told and the dots were connected that the curious event finally made sense. From the images, it initially seemed as though a glitch occurred in the system tracking the wildfire. It went from moving in a standard pattern to turning inward, the direction of every path becoming a single, uniform spot. The fire then began flowing in the direction of this spot. It moved at similar speeds to earlier at first, then steadily sped up in ever-increasing intervals. An image near the very end showed a circular pattern, as though the fire was swirling about like a hurricane as it was funneled down into a singularity. After that are two progressively smaller images of the fire before the final photo showing nothing. Nothing except for miles of earth that had been scorched to the ground in mere minutes instead of the days it should have taken. 147. The man's skin was like coal dipped in midnight, his muscular body scarcely contained in his black suit. The lady across the table was quite the opposite, a middle-aged woman of small stature, with just a few gray hairs woven amongst her blonde ones. She, too, wore a black suit, though she had eschewed the tie in favor of a more casual appearance.
"Numbers," said the woman, her tone measured and even. "What a surprise. You must join us for tea."
"I appreciate the offer, Mrs. Tracking, but I'm afraid my time constraints are somewhat pressing,"
Mr. Numbers declined. He took a seat at their table, suppressing his urge to marvel at the glorious scenery their penthouse suite afforded them.
Japan was always such a lovely place. Mr. Numbers intended to come back for a proper visit one day, just as he had intended for the better part of a decade.
So I gathered. Transport did little more than a pop and drop. Quite rude,
Mrs. Tracking commented.
I'm afraid it will be much the same when he picks me up. We have a lot to talk about and little time to work in,
Mr. Numbers replied. He glanced at the man, who sat so still one might believe he was little more than an exquisitely lifelike carving.
I suppose I'll take the cue,
the man said, in a low, powerful baritone. He touched the hands of both Mr. Numbers and Mrs. Tracking. The world around them slowed to a crawl, then ceased to move at all from what they could discern.
Thank you, Mr. Stopp,
Mr. Numbers said.
What I need to discuss with you is off the record, off the books, and will most likely label me as off the reservation.
Oh, sounds exciting,
Mrs. Tracking said, a bubble of vivaciousness welling up in her.
I do enjoy the occasional black bag operation.
What do you need?
Mr. Stopp asked, vastly more stoic than his partner.
Just a location, Mr. Numbers replied. Two of our current charges have been taken, and they've disabled all the methods we had to pinpoint them.
That is hardly off the books. You're doing your job,
Mrs. Tracking said, her voice rich in disappointment.
No, Mr. Numbers admitted. I was given a direct order not to pursue.
I see,
Mrs. Tracking said.
That does change things.
I'm aware,
Mr. Numbers agreed.
I believe I can fulfill your request, Numbers. All that's left to determine is the price.
Mrs. Tracking flashed a grin that had signaled the end of many a man.
Let us negotiate.
Alice stepped into the common room wearing jeans and a t-shirt. She wished she had an outfit that better screamed warrior, but the only thing that came close was her lander uniform. She didn't want to face the coaches dressed like a student. Something about that just felt wrong. Vince was already waiting, his own outfit similar to hers. He glanced up at her as she entered, giving her a quick nod. If he was feeling anything like her, then his stomach would be twisting in knots of worry. Mr. Transport went to pick up Mr. Numbers, Vince told her. He'll be back in a second.
Okay,
Alice said, sitting down next to him.
Nervous? Vince asked.
God, yes.
Good, Vince said. We're taking on a near impossible task. It's going to be hard enough with just the three of us.
Two of us, Vince. Nick isn't coming.
He'll come, Vince said.
He won't. It's just the two of us.
Three, Vince corrected.
Two.
Three.
Two.
Three,
Nick said, the door to the boy's side whispering shut behind him. He was dressed in a pinstriped suit and a deep purple shirt left open at the collar. His shoes were black, well fitted to the foot, and competent for all forms of movement. His jacket was buttoned only on its top button, holding the shape together without pulling it taut to his frame.
You're coming?
Alice asked.
Of course he's coming, Vince said, standing from the couch. Though I'm not sure why he's dressed like that.
Nick shrugged.
Up until this year, I've always dressed this way. When we do this thing, I don't want to be dressed like the ineffectual smartass. I want to feel like the version of me that can get things done.
Whatever works, Vince said, patting his friend on the back. Nick stared at Vince for a moment.
You never waver, do you, Silver?
Why would I waver on the things I know?
Heaven save me from honest men and lunatics,
Nick replied. He looked at Alice, who had risen to her feet and was staring him down.
What changed your mind?
Honestly? I'm not sure, Nick admitted. Let's just chalk it up to the fact that I haven't gotten to really cut loose in a while, and this seems like a good outlet.
You expect me to believe that?
Nope. Which is why I didn't bother with the truth. No sense in wasting it when you won't trust anything I say,
Nick replied. She'll trust you to help our friends, Vince assured him. Mr. Transport and Mr. Numbers reappeared in the room, looking at the Melbrook residence.
I have the place. Are you ready?
The three looked at each other.
Now or never, Nick said.
Then I pick now,
Alice said, forcing more courage than she felt into her voice.
We're ready, Vince said.
They gathered around Mr. Transport and Mr. Numbers. An instant later, there was only an empty room, the echoes of voices still gently reverberating off the walls. 148. The night was strangely bright as Nick, Alice, and Vince stood on the dusty road. It was still used by the locals during the day, but by this time of night, the only ones traveling its worn lengths were the local wildlife and the occasional tourist who got lost. There were some lights scattered about. However, if not for the moonlight, the visibility would have been greatly reduced. Nick wasn't sure if that suited their purposes well or hurt them. He suspected he wouldn't know for sure until this whole affair had concluded.
We're sure they're coming down this route?
Alice asked yet again. Nick nodded.
Mr. Numbers said his co-worker could tell they were moving 50 miles an hour down this highway. It's off the beaten path, so if we'd launched a manhunt, they wouldn't easily be spotted. But the inverse is that there aren't exits to the highway between where they were and us. They're coming this way, presumably doing the speed limit so as not to get pulled over, which means we have a couple more minutes by my calculations.
I know, I just... What if they stop for the night? Or get a teleporter to help them? Or if wherever they're going is on this road and they've already reached it?
Relax, Nick ordered her. If they had a teleporter they could use, then they wouldn't be taking a truck. As for stopping, Mr. Numbers will contact us if his source senses any dramatic change in their movement. They're coming, Alice.
Okay,
Alice said, vainly willing her heart to cease its mad pounding.
Okay.
You'll be fine, Vince assured her. Just stick to the plan.
Right. Get Herschel whiskey and get Mary away,
Alice said.
Bingo, Nick said. I'll help you if I can, but my main goal is to provide Vince with cover while he fights the coaches. Hopefully, however they're holding Herschel is something Roy can easily overcome. Mary will definitely be unconscious, though.
Why are you so sure about that?
Alice asked.
Because if she was awake, there'd be no way to stop her from trashing the vehicle. Even Persephone's nerve twitch pheromone didn't stop me from thinking. If she can think, then she can kick ass.
All you have to do is get her clear, Vince reiterated. We'll meet up with you down the road. If for any reason we're delayed, call Mr. Transport after 5 minutes for pickup.
But you won't be delayed, right? You're going to get away.
Of course we will, Vince assured her. But it never hurts to have a backup plan. Alice looked away from him, staring down the dark road instead. She didn't think Vince was lying, just believing in the happiest possible scenario. Alice didn't quite feel the optimism welling up in herself. Her mind kept dwelling on all the ways this could go to shit. A nervous giggle escaped Alice's lips.
This sort of feels wrong, doing it at night. Shouldn't we be having our showdown at high noon?
Personally speaking, I prefer poor lighting and shadow when facing overwhelming forces, Nick replied. Don't count on a whole lot of that, Vince said. Nick shot his friend a curious glance. The boy had obviously done something to prep for this fight, but he hadn't shared it with his comrades. In fact, Vince hadn't contributed much to any of their hurried planning process. His eyes had been sharp and focused, but not on anything the others could see. For as lunatic a situation as they were in, Vince had been calm and detached nearly the entire time. This was another variable that Nick wasn't sure if he found comforting or terrifying. As it would ultimately turn out, the answer was both. The man wore a gray silk shirt, black pants, and an expression of extreme derision as he paced in front of Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport.
I'm expected to believe that two of our top operatives were surprised and overpowered by a group of children?
Teens, actually. All of them old enough to be counted as adults. Except for drinking, Mr. Transport pointed out. The man stopped and delivered a withering glare.
This is not the time for semantics or splitting hairs. What you are telling me indicates tremendous incompetence at best, and full-out betrayal at worst. I trust I don't need to explain to you what happens if it's determined to be the latter.
Both men would have gulped if they'd had more control over their bodies. However, Mr. Move was not notorious for his mercy or kindness, so as soon as he'd heard the bad news, Mr. Move had taken over control of everything in their bodies except for speech.
I have to tell you, I'm very disappointed in you two,
Mr. Move said, taking a seat on the table in front of them.
I am certain that our supervisors will find our actions both understandable and non-traitorous. We were taken by surprise and bested. No one is perfect, after all, Mr. Numbers defended.
Maybe they will,
Mr. Move agreed.
But we'll be finding out soon. Mr. Transport is going to take us to the home office, so that you two can explain things in person.
Mr. Transport and Mr. Numbers would have shared a look of concern, had they been capable. They'd known this reaction was within the realm of possibility, and had tried to take action to mitigate it. Unfortunately, they had yet to see the results they were hoping for, which could prove detrimental to the plan. If they went to the head office, they wouldn't have their phones, and that would result in no one being on hand to retrieve their charges once the mission was complete.
An excellent idea, Mr. Transport said. Won't you need to give them advanced notice, though? It is a late hour, after all.
No need,
Mr. Move replied.
They were already assembled to decide how to react to the initial kidnapping. I was given full authorization to move personnel to their location should a need arise.
Well then. Excellent, Mr. Transport said, unable to think of an alternative argument. He could refuse to use his power. Mr. Move only overtook their bodies, not the abilities that they wielded. That move would end the game, though, labeling him and Mr. Numbers as traitors and moving their own safety far higher on their immediate concerns list. Still, it was a viable strategy, and one he might have to employ. Mr. Transport was saved from his decision by a loud, authoritative knock on the door. Mr. Numbers and Mr. Transport couldn't see one another from the way their heads were positioned. If they had been able to, they would have known they were both smiling quite unprofessionally. Mitigating factors
had arrived. 149. The three would-be ambushers saw the distant headlights long before they heard the steady thrum of the truck's engine. The pinpoints of light were too high off the road for a sedan, and too widely spaced for a standard pickup. That left 18-wheeler, or large transport vehicle. Nick glanced down at his watch. Estimating from the truck's speed, it would be here in another 3 minutes, a time which fit neatly into the expected window. "It's them," Nick announced, shooting a quick look at his compatriots. "Everyone ready?" Vince nodded. Alice did as well, though more hesitantly. "Good. As soon as they stop, everybody stick to the plan," Nick instructed one last time. He tried to keep things general rather than bogging them down in details, but it was crucial that each one stick to their roles. Their chances of success were already disgustingly slim. If a single person broke rank, then all hope would be lost.
"About that, I have a question,"
Alice said. Nick glanced again at the approaching lights, now increasing in size and brightness. "Make it a quick one."
"It's about stopping the truck. How do we know standing in the road will get them to brake? What if they just mow us down?"
"Alice, did you really think I would build an entire plan that depended on basic human decency? Give me a little credit."
"Then how are you stopping the truck?"
Nick gauged the truck's speed once more. It would be here very soon, so he might as well get started. "With a whole lot of bad luck." Nick clenched his fist and drew in a deep breath. He realized the futility of exercising fake tells when he could no longer hide his real one, but Nick Campbell was nothing if not committed to his role. Nick focused on the truck bearing down on them, on the front part of the cab, on the engine, and specifically, on the driver. He wasn't sure who would be at the wheel, but he certainly knew who he was hoping for. He kept his mind aimed at the vehicle, and then he began to gather the bad luck. Normally, he could use a simple burst. However, for a project this big, he was going to need one doozy of a wallop. Alice gasped and took a step back in surprise. Vince was more stoic, merely commenting,
"Well, that explains the glasses."
As the luck built up in Nick, the irises of his eyes began to glow with a golden light. It was dim at first, slowly growing brighter as the power accumulated. Nick kept those radiant eyes trained on his speeding metal adversary. He needed to act when the machine was far enough away not to catch them in whatever catastrophe occurred, but close enough to be quickly reachable by Alice. Optimum timing would come down to a difference of mere seconds. The right corner of Nick's mouth tugged upward ever so slightly. He hadn't had a challenge like this in years. The truck grew nearer, and the time was at hand. Nick hardened his focus, shifted just a touch more bad luck in the driver's direction, and then let fly. What happened next was an orchestra of malfunction. The engine caught fire and began billowing smoke. All four tires blew out simultaneously, and both axles snapped as the truck came careening to the ground. It dove forward in a head-first motion, smashing the grill into the ground and severely crumpling the front compartment. It skidded across the cement, coming to the verge of tipping before slamming back onto its base. Dust flew freely into the air, and a sea of shrapnel lay in the truck's wake. Though it was a tremendous amount of action, it occurred in mere seconds. By the time Nick's eyes had dulled to their normal brown, the only sound remaining on the dark country road was the soft crackling of flames coming out of the engine.
"Holy shit," Alice said, her voice dumbstruck.
"Worship me later," Nick chided her. "Right now, we've got to get over there before they can recover." He and Vince began dashing down the road at top speed. Alice lifted off the ground and accelerated, quickly passing them in the race to save their friends.
"Well, that was a shit wreck," Coach George commented, calmly, as he tossed Mary over his shoulder.
The tall man had switched to his robotic form at the first wobble they'd felt from the floor. The crash had been predominantly absorbed by the front of the vehicle, but Herschel still found himself sore, pitched to the side, and with blood trickling from where his handcuffs had pulled against his skin. It seemed Coach George had lifted Mary up during the worst of it, otherwise she would have been tossed about since she wasn't restrained to the floor.
"What was that?"
Herschel asked, his head finally clearing up with the input of these new injuries.
"Hey, Persephone, report! Did you hit a squirrel or something?"
Coach George demanded. No response came from the smoking front cab.
"Fuck. Guess this just became a one-man job."
Coach George kicked open the back door, sending it sprawling off its hinges. He turned back to regard Herschel.
"Kid, it's been fun, but my job is delivery of your friend, not to deal with whatever the hell just smashed my truck. Looks like at least you're off the hook. I can only fly with one passenger."
A series of flaps on Coach George's back opened, and his legs began to pulse with a green energy. Of course he could fly. Herschel cursed inwardly. Someone had come to save them, and now Coach George was going to soar off before they could reach Mary. Coach George was going to get away, and Herschel was going to be just sitting here, useless as always. It was amazing Coach George had even bothered chaining him to the ground. Herschel blinked and looked at his restraints. His hands were still bound by a long length of chain, but the bolt that held them to the floor had been ripped off in the crash. Herschel sucked in a long breath that made his ribs ache. He made a snap decision. Coach George was still powering up his legs when over 200 pounds of husky student slammed into his back. Before he could bring himself to believe what was happening, a chain had been thrown around his neck, then wrapped over again. Herschel managed three more layers before George reached up and snared his right arm.
"It has occurred to you that in this mode I don't need oxygen, right?"
"I pretty much assumed it,"
Herschel wheezed. Holding himself onto George's back was already proving a difficult task to maintain. That had been the true purpose of looping his chains. It bound him to the metallic man with something more than his poor arm strength.
"So what are you doing?"
"You can't fly with two people,"
Herschel replied.
"Really, kid? You've spent your whole life living in the shadow of your better alter ego, and now you decide you want to play hero? I've got an idea. Let's skip to the part where you realize you can't cut it and just let go. Otherwise, things might get troublesome."
On his last word, Coach George tightened his grip on Herschel's arm. Herschel managed to bite back a cry. George's fingers felt like they were already gripping him on the bone, and Herschel was under no illusions that this was the strongest he could clutch.
"Roy isn't the only son of Titan. Do your worst. I won't let you take Mary."